Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 9th edition of Exploring Enterprise, the podcast series from the Enterprise Research Centre. I'm Stephen Roper. I'm director of the Enterprise Research Centre, or ERC. And today I'm joined by my colleague, Anastasia Ree, a research fellow with us at the ERC, Mark Swift, head of the SME group at Warwick Manufacturing Group based at Warwick University, and Darren Joint, managing director of Viking Signs Limited, a digital on design sign manufacturing company. So the theme for today's session is SMEs and the triple transition. So I suppose we better explain first what we mean by the triple transition. So Anastasia, we're going to come to you first. I think you've been working with colleagues at the ERC on research on what we're calling the triple transition. What do we mean by this? How are we thinking about this?
Yes, thank you, Steve. So we introduced this term, triple transition, for the first time in our latest report, which is State of Small Business Britain 2021, which was published in January this year. And this actually includes three things. So the digital transition, the net zero transition, and the productivity upgrading. So these three things we know all that they have been very high on policy agenda lately. And these are, of course, very much macro challenges. But to attain these macro level challenges, the hard lifting should be done by businesses. And among other things, of course, by SMEs, who are the core of the UK business population.
So Anastasia, what makes this so important for SMEs in the kind of current climate?
I think we probably need to look from on this from a little bit more global perspective. I think there's a real global shift in paradigm for future development. And we actually have been seeing this on different types of, in terms of different types of interventions. So we have seen the topic twin transition employed by European Commission, for example. We have seen quite a lot of actions from the UK government, and they also have this vision of that the recovery from the COVID-19 crisis should be green, and the role played by SMEs actually in this recovery, green recovery, is quite important because, well, as we know, lately it has been estimated that the share in carbon emissions of the SME sector is about 50-60% of the global carbon emissions in the UK, and that's kind of an important one. So, and of course, so SMEs need to play the role here, but there's a third thing in there, which is the productivity. And the productivity has been known as productivity puzzle in the UK. So we know that compared to other European or other OECD countries, UK stands not very nicely in terms of the productivity. And of course, it goes down to the productivity at the firm level. So why we bring all these three things together is because this is probably a tool for SMEs and for businesses to look forward and to reinforce their resilience, to reinforce their competitivity by investing and by taking actions in both digital space and net zero space.
Thanks, Anastasia. And Mark, you work for WMG and you've been working with SMEs for many years to help them improve their businesses, support productivity, support innovation. How is this combination of digital net zero coming together in the work that you're doing, this kind of triple transition? Is that something you recognize in the way that you're supporting companies?
I really do recognise that actually. It's really timely to report for us, I think. We've been working with digital adoption in small businesses probably for about 10 years or so now. I think the approach we've always been trying to take is that, you know, don't just add digital to a company, understand how it can actually improve company performance. It's not just about new hardware, new software, it's around really how to drive your business strategy. So we've been doing that for about 10 years or so, but more recently, although we've been working sustainability in its broadest sense, we're really trying to think about, okay, what does net zero mean for small businesses? How can you use net zero again to improve company performance, you know, help them to do things perhaps they couldn't do before? It's not just a cost, it's actually could be a commercial opportunity for businesses. You know, you can reach new customers you haven't been able to reach before, perhaps. You can do things which maybe drives reducing waste, etc. So I think bringing those things together It's about improving performance, productivity. Digital is a tool to do that. I think if we did right with net zero, I think I can also drive and performance as well with businesses.
Darren, we'll bring you in at this point, I think, because Mark was saying about the importance of digital being central to a business and the enabler of the business. And I think you've taken your own business through something of a transformation based around digital technologies. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the story of that?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, we're very lucky in that it's been a transformation in some ways, but in many ways we're digital at heart, and that's one of the reasons why we describe ourselves as digital on-demand manufacturing companies, because that's core to what we do. So we make signs, obviously, and the signage industry kind of has a standard end, which is very traditional, would tend to be using traditional methods of bulk manufacturing, screen printing, with tooling that's fixed, and the very digital end where it's making one-off bespoke products. We took that one-off bespoke manufacturing capability, digital methods, and we've applied it to the kind of volume, medium volume, standard product end of the world. So it's allowed us to grow and scale our operations over the last 15 years of my involvement to now, our products traditionally would be produced and stocked and stored, produced in bulk. We make those 100% on demand digitally as required. And it's allowed us to not be constrained by stock holding of different variants, but our stock holding effectively is our digital input data to that process. All of the manufacturing is digital with tooling produced on the fly on demand. So printing and cutting information created digitally, every print run dynamically or on demand, and using digital systems to have data transfer throughout the whole process of the business to make us very responsive and very, very fast and flexible.
Sounds fantastic, Darren. And I think that sort of, you know, very lean process is something that, you know, we'd like to see in many more businesses. What was the impetus for this? Was this your own background that led to this transition, or was this something else in the business which actually pushed you in or prompted you to go in this direction?
Yeah, I mean, I come from the automotive engineering world. I was worked for Ford for 10 years and saw, I guess, both the way that automotive companies were trying to do on demand and also the kind of connectivity of digital systems. You know, big corporate enterprises tend to do very big corporate systems ahead of SMEs because they've got a larger budget to do that, but they're not very nimble. I was really lucky and fortunate in some ways to be under quite kind of difficult in projects towards the end of my career with Ford, where we were under a lot of time pressure, and I was allowed to break some of the corporate constraints, if you like, and adopt what were then quite cutting edge, you know, video calling technologies to share with I had teams working all around the world, which an SME wouldn't. So I experienced the kind of need to do some of those things and those emerging digital technologies. And I was allowed to adopt them perhaps faster than a corporate would normally do. And I think I brought that experience to Viking when I joined his family business. I joined my parents. My father also came from an electronics manufacturing world where he'd also experienced the pros and cons of stocking things. And when we launched our own manufacturing capability, we were adamant that we were going to not be kind of guessing, predicting requirements. We'd be able to make it on demand and respond rapidly, flexibly to customer demand as required. And that's what we were able to do.
And that making on demand must have been critical. That flexibility must have been critical over the pandemic period, because presumably demand was much, much more variable over the last year or two. How has that played out for you?
Yes, I mean, we've been incredibly fortunate to have been the busiest we've ever been over this period. You know, and the whole team, I say it's a combination of luck and judgment that put us in this position. I don't know in which proportion of those two things, but you know, our market for traditional safety signs stopped pretty much. Most people weren't thinking about that, and obviously everyone will have seen social distancing signage all over the place. That was a whole new kind of suite of product demand that was needed very quickly. And there's two parts really that allowed us to respond very quickly to that, probably faster than anyone else, I think, in the marketplace. One is that we had no stock of existing products that we didn't know what to do with. We only could make new products. We could make new products very quickly. The other thing that we had this kind of industrial digital factory. The part which was previously quite static and difficult for us to adapt very quickly was the data input to that, so product specifications. Prior to the pandemic, we'd been developing systems ourselves to be able to develop that data architecture and product data much quicker and in a systematized way, so that we can develop PDFs that produce the artwork, marketing data about the pricing, all that structural data in a systematic way. And for me, that's the next evolution of Industry 4, is that data architecture that inputs to a truly digital factory. And we, the systems effectively that we needed to do that, we came on stream just prior to the pandemic, that allowed us to, you know, when we needed social distancing signage, we had no symbols for those. We had no, you know, we didn't really know what the market wanted. We were able to produce 20,000, I think, new products in the first 3 weeks that met what we thought the demand was going to be. And in some cases, those products were incredibly needed. And in some cases, we didn't get it right. But that didn't matter, because what we'd made is a digital product that never came to fruition. We didn't have to make it. We could offer that to the market and see what the market wanted, and then build on the things that were strong and worked and adapt very quickly.
I think that sort of that digital capability is something that we might come back to a little bit in a few minutes with Anastasia, when we reflect a little bit on the more on the sort of research that we've been doing in the Enterprise Research Center and some of the barriers sometimes to businesses actually moving down this kind of triple transition route where they are taking on these digital technologies. But Mark, you Darren's clearly sitting on a success story, but how is this typical of businesses? How is this story of digitization and its contribution to growth? Is that something that resonates with you in terms of the companies that you're working with at WMG?
It does, but it's quite different. It really depends on the types of the business and the environment. I think there's an increasing number of businesses are taking, I would say, more shorter strides than Darren. Darren, you've made some really significant strides, and very, you know, congratulations to you and the work you've done there. There's not so many doing the more transformative, but I'll give some examples. So I think that this businesses who are trying to improve their productivity, the labor productivity, introduction of in my world digital, because digital manufacturing, so digital manufacturing includes things like automation, robotics, additive manufacturing, etc., and we use data in the business. So business is taking relatively short steps, I suppose, introducing cobots and robots into the production lines. Yeah, that's starting to take a bit more of a hold, really. In fact, we've just done a piece of work with a business, an automotive business, as Darren was suggesting, you know, is probably one of the most competitive sectors out there. They are 70% automotive, fiercely competitive, as I say. Introducing some robots has enabled them to reduce some of the labour on some of the production lines from 3 to 1, which is really significant, and that's big news for them. Having the confidence to do that is another thing entirely. Maybe we'll go on to that, and the confidence and the tools, the investment and the timing, the awareness is the whole thing itself. But more transformative, I think, is probably a bit more interesting, I guess. We're seeing companies that are changing sector because they're using digital for the first time. So we've worked with an IT business who is really good at data systems, analyzing information, taking micropayments, etc. We've seen them become a manufacturer, which is extraordinary, because they realize with vehicle charging points, you know, sort of charging points you'll see in the high street, etc., they need to take micropayments, they need to be digitally connected, they need to take all sorts of things that they were doing in the IT business. So they've started to become a manufacturer of vehicle charging points, which is great. You know, it's a real transformative step. I guess another example I've seen is a brewery, making very nice beer, I must add. They've actually been able to use digital to track the beer barrels in the supply chain. So how many beer barrels they have, or beer kegs? Where are they? Are they full? Are they empty? Who's got them? Are they in one pub or the other? Are they on the truck going to or from the beer to the pub? How many have they got back at the brewery? Which is great. And then they've been able to then set up a data analytics firm, So now they provide that service to other businesses. So they're coming from a brewery to becoming a data analytics firm, which is really, really transformative. And that opens up huge markets, de-risks the business, and enables them to shore up and do more on the brewery, which is their real passion. So it's interesting. So different levels, I'll say, I think, you know, from more these smaller steps you get in the businesses to improve labor productivity, start to see more of those things. And, you know, adding that the UK does fall behind when it comes to adoption of robots, you know, we're pretty far down the league table, than the international league tables. But those transformative steps are really interesting, you know, people moving from one step to the other to protect the business, also at least grow the business.
I think it's a great story, Mark, and I think it echoes some of the sort of transformation that Darren and colleagues made in their own company. Darren, I suppose one of the other things that we've been interested in about the sort of move towards digital is how it can help you sort of take cost out of the business and move a little bit towards a more, you know, environmentally friendly, sustainable, net zero type of business model. Has that been part of the thinking with you, or has the move towards digitization actually had some benefits in that sort of area?
It certainly has. I mean, perhaps to highlight Mark's point there about sector crossover stuff first. The other part of our business is manufacturing products for other manufacturers, and that, as a result of our industrialization of standard products and the very responsive nature of that, has allowed us to provide bespoke products to other manufacturers in a very systematic way as well. So it's true for us as well that our digitalization has allowed us to kind of hop sectors, if you like, and provide similar or, you know, much better levels of response and flexibility to sectors that wouldn't normally be able to offer that. Back to the environmental thing, I mean, I think that's something which we've kind of come to realize increasingly is a benefit of our approach, that we don't make anything that's not required. So there's no wastage of obsolescence of product. There's no storage of that product. I don't pay to store things in a warehouse. I don't have a warehouse. We only make what's needed. And the way that we optimize the production of that digitally on the fly, making only what's, you know, the print jobs are optimized to use the material usage. So it's having all those benefits as a result of efficiency of the way of doing it. You know, we're using less raw materials because we're only making products that's actually needed. And we're also making it, the supply chain is shortened effectively because it's close to the point of need. So, I mean, I think, although that wasn't why we did it initially, we're now coming to realize that actually, as a way of delivering net zero improvements, our model absolutely helps and supports that.
Do you find you're getting kind of requests from customers for more environmentally friendly materials to be used in the signage that you're making, or has that not got to your particular kind of supply chain yet?
It's difficult at the moment, to be honest, because generally the outcome of that is more cost and less performance, which is a difficult thing to sell. Everyone wants it to be greener and better, but not normally at the expense of, you know, the performance of it and the base cost of it. One of the advantages of our model actually is that because we're not making and we're not committing material to product, is that we're trying to now offer some alternatives. So at the point of demand, we're trying to offer viable options, material choices that the customer could choose to pick, and then we would make those and not the ones which are perhaps less recyclable or recycled content. So it kind of allows the customer to make those choices. But it is difficult with all the other pressures at the moment on cost to persuade customers to choose the more expensive option. Again, particularly when often that isn't with a performance enhancement. It's if we could have a better performing product, then absolutely, I think people would be choosing that more, and we'd be making more of those things.
Thanks, Darren. And Anastasia, we've heard from Darren about some of the sort of challenges here of the digital and the net zero, and also some of the ways that the two things work together. What's the research telling us more broadly about that relationship between digital and net zero?
Yeah, well, I think what Darren told us, it's very, very interesting. But the truth about the evidence from coming from research is that it's really in early stages. And I think we still know quite a little things about this relationship inside of the businesses, how these net zero objectives and how digital technologies enable firms to move forward on this sustainability journey. And actually what we have been doing at ERC is that we have been looking at how actually businesses who are already digitally innovating, who are adopting new digital, emerging digital technologies, how they are more likely or less likely to adopt zero practices. And actually what we see that businesses which are quite advanced in this digital journey as Darren's companies, they are also more likely to engage in the net zero practices. And the other strand of the research, which is quite important, is to more is to focus a little bit more on this enabling functions of digital technologies and how they may be leveraged or used for to attain some sustainability goals. And I think what Darren told us is very, very illustrative of this. So because you are having these digital capabilities, you probably slightly we can do it slightly differently. And this actually may help us to attain some interesting sustainability goals as well. I think that the examples, well, the kind of the easy examples, you know, that Darren has already talked about, well, the video conferencing, for example. So how much does it, what are the implications in terms of carbon emissions when we are now having quite a lot of discussions and presentations online instead of taking a plane or taking a car, etc. There are also more more developed tools like computer-aided design, which is already integrating some functionalities as having cloud storage, and this enables collaboration, cooperation probably worldwide. So you don't need your partner or your collaborator to be in the same room as you, but you can collaborate with anyone in any part of the world. And so, and this also, of course, would have some very important implications in terms of net zero. What we have been seeing in our research is that, for example, stepping back probably from this very very fine-tuned technologies that Darren and Mark have been talking about, if we even look at the customer relationship management systems, we see the connection actually of the businesses adopting these types of systems and their likelihood, their probability to also start to do environmental reports and audits and start to try to introduce low carbon products and services in their portfolio of products. Because there's this agility, there's this interaction between the customer and the business, and businesses may respond more in more flexible way to the demand coming from customers. At least it's what we start to see from data. We also start to see from data that there is a link between the use of quite advanced digital technologies like artificial intelligence and actually the likelihood to be engaged in research and development on environmental issues. So we would probably have this digitally enabled eco-innovations coming along the way, and I'm sure there's plenty of precise stories about this.
Darren, you wanted to come in on something that Anastasia had said.
Yes, I mean, I absolutely agree with all of that, particularly, you know, I've got a whole team working from home. That's obviously reducing travel. We're still doing that. It's working. It's been a fantastic kind of innovation for us to be able to do that. The next stage of evolution, I was talking about, you know, us moving up the kind of value chain to the creation of the data that produces the products, is distributed manufacturing. So, you know, I talked about us being relatively close to the point of use. I can see a time when we'd be further up the value chain of producing the data that produces products and distributing that to further distributed manufacturing places. We don't have to make it all necessarily closer to the point of actual need. I think that's kind of the next stage of evolution, perhaps, of using digital technologies and tools to distribute the actual production.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, I think that, you know, we've seen in some areas with 3D printing, for example, that kind of maker space is beginning to develop a little bit. Mm-hmm. Mark, we've talked about some of the benefits of sort of digital adoption and you know, Darren's case, and then Anastasia talking a little bit more about the broader benefits. But I was wanting to talk a little bit about what you see as the barriers to adoption. I know you've been thinking about a new sort of developing a new SME strategy at WMG, and I wondered kind of what the strands of that were that were helping firms perhaps to overcome some of the barriers to adoption.
Perhaps I'll just talk about the barriers first, really. I mean, this is an enormous question, I think. The barriers really depends on the context of the business, the environment, perhaps the awareness. But I think the key, there's probably some key points really. I think one is the awareness of the technology. You know, what can the technology do for my business? The second thing is the terminology, I don't think helps. So there's digital, and I can think of digital twins, digital factories, additive layer manufacturing, artificial intelligence, blockchains. I mean, there's just so much terminology out there, doesn't it? And it's really difficult to navigate that. I don't think that helps. But I think the main barrier is just that realization between these technologies or net zero and the link to realizing what the business strategy is. We have to do an awful lot of work, really, the projects we go to, of linking, understanding what the business strategy is, where the business needs to go for year 1, 2, 3 plus, and then how these tools can be used to go on that journey. An example of that, we've just been running the West Midlands Made Smarter program, and we've seen about 100 businesses in about 8 months. So we've gone to those 100 businesses, and we developed a digital roadmap. So it's working quite closely with really, understanding what this digital roadmap will do, creating that plan. Some businesses may have one already, but sort of give them a second opinion, I guess. But we're just scratching the surface. We think there's about 15,000 small manufacturers in the UK which are ripe for digital adoption. And they all need probably some sort of strategy or technology roadmap in place so they can navigate these technologies and these different things that you can do different tools to make a difference. So I think awareness, the terminology, linking the benefits to the business strategy, and of course having some investment. The businesses, most businesses we work, they run a very tight ship, and putting some investment into some technology, they have to absolutely be reassured and have confidence that it's going to give them a return. Or they'll just go somewhere else because they have enough pressures on their budgets as it is, I guess. So we have to really unlock those benefits and turn that into a plan. And that's exactly the same work we've been doing with the West Midlands Made Smarter program in the last year or so.
Mark, is there a plan to sort of expand and develop the number of companies that you can work with through the Made Smarter program? I guess you'd like to do that for sure, but is that on the cards, do you think?
Yeah, there's a 3-year plan now to extend that up until 2025. That's right, 2025, sort of 3 years on top of that. So that would give us an automatic opportunity to extend it a bit further. But the rest of WMG, and unfortunately I work with the 6 of the high value manufacturing catapult centres, from Strathclyde down to Bristol. So we've got a plan to extend those sort of programmes across the other 6 catapult centres, well, the other 5, because we're active with one already, across the other 5 centres. And then at WMG more locally, it's very much, as you alluded to a minute ago, it's very much part of our 3-to-5-year plan at WMG about how we can do more on digital adoption. But we always say to businesses, it's not just digital, this is digital to drive productivity or to have a business change, positive change. We'll never say, we're going to do a digital project. It goes back to another fundamental principles. What we do is absolutely about driving positive business change. So digital is absolutely part of our 3-to-5-year strategy, as is net zero, and as is wrapped around productivity and a few other things within our supply chains.
So this is absolutely about digital as an enabler, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Transition to change in the business. Darren?
I was going to say, I agree with everything Mark's saying, particularly about Made Smarter. I'm a really strong supporter of that. I'm part of the Greater Lincolnshire LEP. I run the manufacturing board. It's our top priority is to get Made Smarter rolled out to our region. We can't currently access it. And I think, I'd like to think that we're a model for what that can do. Although we didn't benefit from Made Smarter, digital technology, I'm a evangelist, if you like, about it. And I really think Made Smarter is the way to deliver that to more companies. Because I think you know, about the kind of barriers to smaller businesses adopting it. They need a brand that they identify with, and that takes some time to percolate and be made aware of. In most small companies, they wouldn't be aware of it. You know, I'm been around long enough to remember Mass and how that started to develop a brand identity that people knew and understood and were kind of looking for, it as opposed to it being kind of thrust at them. So I think Made Smarter is really key to keep that rollout and keep the kind of momentum behind that. And I think the other point Mark made about was common was technology and terminology for that. Made Smarter is, I think, starting down the path of having much clearer kind of separation of those, that terminology, and being consistent with the use of, when we're talking about industrial digital technology, using the same terminology for the same things, so that when we're talking to small businesses about ERP systems or big data or whatever, what does that mean for them? What can they actually do with it? The only other point I wanted to make was about large technology projects and how difficult that is for SMEs to kind of cope with. We've always been very taken an agile approach where, you know, we try to do something relatively small, hook up some systems that are in existence already rather than developing them from scratch. So do something small and see some benefit from it means SMEs can actually learn as they go to find something useful from it that they actually benefit from, rather than this huge project that takes, you know, years to come to fruition and may never actually get the benefit you need.
I know I'm involved in something called the National Innovation Centre for Rural Enterprise, and one of the things they've been doing there is a something called Just One Step, which is more about net zero than it is about digital, but it is about trying to say for two SMEs particularly, just take one step along the road and, you know, see where that leads you, and then take another step, you know, and begin to build like that and actually share that learning with other companies as well. And that's which also seems very important in these, as we go into these rather uncharted territories for many people.
One of my concerns, I guess, with Made Smarter is that it is being rolled out piecemeal, and that means that you don't necessarily get the best possible learning from each of those separate projects, and I have a concern about the kind of centralized resource and learning from that. And sharing, but there is sharing of best practice because each of the new ones are trying to learn from the parties who have already done it. But there's not really a very well-resourced central pool of collaboration and resource sharing of that. And that, unless it is done like that, I worry that we will have to learn the same lessons in each of the regional projects.
Mark?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, Darren. I'm fortunate to lead the development of the West Midlands program, and we need to learn from the other regions. It's absolutely important to do that. I think that some of the models, all the models have pros and cons, really, but we're not showing as much as we can do. But what it has done, I think you alluded to as well, is it's given a clear brand identity, you know, to digital. You know, similar to manufacturing advisory service, MAS had a clear brand for for manufacturing. The sort of the tagline we're trying to use for Made Smart and Westmans, at least, it is it's designed by manufacturers for manufacturers. It has to speak the language, has to understand what your key challenge is, and has to respond to those and to make it real for you. But yeah, I agree. We do need to join them up. And would I like to do it in Lincolnshire? Absolutely. You know, we've had interest from all sorts of parts of the UK, and we need to move more, I think, absolutely. We need to spread it much further than it is.
Well, I'm sure Bay's colleagues will be listening to this. they will take the hint. Guys, we're almost out of time, so let's move on just to the sort of final question I wanted to ask. And I suppose we've been talking about the sort of digital transition and the move towards net zero and the need for many SMEs to improve their sort of productivity. And I just wondered whether you had one or two key ideas that you might share with other SMEs if you were to have the opportunity. Anastasia, let's start with you. Was there one or two things that you thought were perhaps the key lessons from the research that you've done?
Well, I think it was very well already illustrated, but what Darren and Mark just said. But actually, I think I've written my list of the three things. But and I think the first thing in the list is actually joins quite well the discussion of today. And actually, it supports firms to develop the absorptive capacity. So actually, to help them to build this ability to recognize what are the benefits of technologies and how to better implement it in the way which would be very bespoke for the business itself. And of course, the one which is related to this absorptive capacity thing is the skills, because from the from our surveys, what from what we have been doing here is that. It's not even about the costs of adoption. It's also about the skills that the business has inside of it to implement these changes. And these changes are very important and very transformative. And so I think the skills perspective is important at firm level, but also at the country level, because we really need to build this probably skills pipeline, which is changing very, very quickly. And the final ones probably some kind of clear regulatory framework, because the more certainty businesses would have about how the things will evolve in terms of regulation in the future, the better they will be in the better place they will be to make steps forward. So that's me.
Mark, what would your key areas be? I mean, do you come back to skills, or is there a different? Would you have a slightly different take on this?
If I could be bold and have three, I guess. So you said two, but I'm going to go for three if I can. So my three approaches would be, I guess, it's make sure what you do, you've got a very clear business strategy in place. You know, the 1-2-year, 3-year plan. You can't really start unless you've got that very clear in terms of what you're trying to achieve. Second is start small. You know, lots of businesses create huge amounts of data, but seldom do we look at that data. And if with digital, you're going to create even more data. So you know, understand that data, understand perhaps how you can how your markets are changing or your business's improvement, how you can change business performance overall. And then finally, I guess a word of caution, I guess, don't expect by pouring on data onto your processes. Like my colleague said yesterday, like pouring a pot of gravy onto your processes would result in a performance gain. You'll just get an almighty sticky mess. So, you know, you must make sure the business is in a fit state to begin with, really, with a clear business strategy, business processes, and be match fit.
That reflect your experience, Darren, or would you throw something else into the mix apart from Made Smarter in Lincolnshire now?
Well, Made Smarter across the whole of East Midlands, okay. Please. It's a hooked up connection between D2N to Greater Lincolnshire and Leicestershire. Let's.
Okay,
so
all right,
not just Lincolnshire.
No, I'll we'll allow you that one,
please, yes. Baze. I've got three for you as well. If I'll do them quickly, if that's all right. So I already said one is agile. So thinking in an agile way, doing something, seeing the results, you know, moving, building on that, number one. Many of these we've thought about how to explain them after we've done them, to be honest. So and this one maybe is not so appropriate. We call it build tanks, not walls. So, you know, which in the current light of things, perhaps not the right thing to call it. But anyway, it's about strategic capability. So trying to add things to our process capabilities that allow us to do a whole raft of new things. So not a dedicated production line, but a piece of equipment or a process that allows us to expand our offering to a new market or a new product. And then the last one is about digital technology and software, and using wherever possible existing platforms and connecting those together, and only developing kind of bespoke things when that's the last resort and it's the only other choice and it's not available. It gives you a strategic advantage that you can't buy anywhere else. That's my three.
All good advice, I think. And the success of Viking over the last few years, I think, is pretty good testimony to the value of those. So
thank you,
Darren. Thank you very much for your contribution today. Likewise, Anastasia and Mark. To everyone behind the scenes of the recording, thank you very much. Thank you to you for listening to the podcast today too. If you enjoyed it and you're interested in finding out more about the work of ERC, you can visit www.enterpriseresearch.ac.uk. Or a quick search for Viking Signs or WMG, we'll find both of those organizations online too. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll look forward to joining you again next time.